And welcome into the Tuesday edition. Robbie and Rex Road here on 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you. Hope everybody's off to a fabulous start on this Tuesday morning. We're out here today at MTSU, Johnny Red Floyd Stadium. They've opened their new Stephen and Denise Smith Student Athlete Performance Center. Joe, it's beautiful. I walked inside there a little bit earlier. It's awesome looking. Brand new building out here for the student athletes at MTSU. And we're out here live today. It's media day at MTSU. They're going to have football practice out here on the new turf at Johnny Red Floyd Stadium. Coming up here a little bit later at 7 o'clock. So we'll have MTSU football coach Derek Mason on with us a little bit later in the program at 6:45. Chris Massaro, MTSU athletic director, will be with us at 8:30 as well. But good to be out here today in Murfreesboro at MTSU. What's going on, Joe?
Yeah, and we walked right by the Kevin Byard Strength and Performance Center,
I think.
Pretty awesome. Big, huge glass windows. Looked like a pretty strong weight room there. All new around here, all connected. Really, they've really done a nice job here. It's real nice.
It is. So we're going to be out here all morning long. I think Jake Lyman will be out here as well. So lots coming today from Murfreesboro and Blue Raider football. Year number two for Derek Mason out here beginning this fall. So a team that's in transition. He talked to us about that last year, but it's going to be a team that's interesting to watch as he's continuing to try to build that program this year. So we will get into that a little bit more later this hour with Derek Mason. He will join us at 6:45 coming up. Got a lot to get into on the program today. We got a lot of Titans talk to get into. We'll take your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. The coaches poll is out in college football. We'll get into that, what that means. A new media deal between ESPN and NFL that we'll get into a little bit later in the program as well. So lots coming today here on the show. Joe, the Titans have officially released their depth chart, which we know in training camp has limitations on what that actually means. But people talk about it. But the depth chart is out yesterday. And I will say this, you know, there's not a lot to it that really catches my eye. You know, it's an unofficial depth chart put out by the team. So there are real limitations as to what it actually means. But I did take a look at wide receiver and the way that they've kind of structured that and what that looks like. And it's basically right in line with what I thought it would be, which leads me to the question of, is the wide receiver room already – I'm not going to say solidified, but is it going to take something significant to shake up what it already is? Or could there be somebody that really surprises here? You know, Ridley, Lockett, and Van Jefferson were listed as the starters, so there's three right there. And immediately behind all of those guys, you've got Oliver, DK, and Io Manor. Well, there's six, right. And those are about the six guys that I thought, you know, are probably, you know, the ones that are going to make the team. So, you know, are they going to keep seven? I have no idea. Could somebody step in and take an Oliver spot, or I guess one of the fourth round receivers spots? You know, Van Jefferson, is he a lock to make the team? All those things. But those six guys at wide receiver, is that going to be what the Titans wide receiving core is this year? And who maybe could step up and challenge one of those guys for a roster spot? I guess that's what I've got my eye on the rest of camp here.
Yeah, the one guy that's been getting buzz is James Prochet.
Yep.
So could he potentially, like, you know, sneak in there for Bryce Oliver? Obviously special teams would be a part of either of them making the team. Or could he be the seventh? And, of course, I mean, I predicted Xavier Restrepo to make the team, so I guess I have to figure out a way that's going to happen. Van Jefferson was a guy I looked at as like, is this guy maybe, you know, is the name at this point sort of outweighing the actual player? But he seems to be in a solid position. So, you know, Restrepo at this point, it's to me probably looking a little more like maybe, you know, he'd get exposed and they'd hope to sign him to the practice squad.
Yep.
I mean, it's not like there's any real push where he's taking away reps. I don't think for a minute that either of those fourth round picks are in any kind of jeopardy, because I think that they've performed well enough too to not, so not only were they already coming in with an advantage, but I don't think they've done anything to hurt themselves really. So, so I mean, I think that's, and again, I think Oliver's darn near, you know, a really strong position. So, like, do you have a seventh? And then if you do have a seventh, you know, you're taking away from somewhere else on the team to have that seventh receiver. So that I guess Prochet and Restrepo, obviously Burke's out of the picture now. It's those guys. But, you know, Jefferson listed as a starter. I'm still interested to see if he can be overtaken there too. If we look at the actual depth chart part of it, in the top of the depth chart, is that, you know, is he locked in for like that kind of snaps, for that kind of a role, or could, you know, an Iowa Manor end up edging him out and getting more work at some point? I don't know.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think too, you know, Brian Callahan said something earlier in camp that I think is really worth remembering. And, you know, I heard PK talk about this yesterday with Jake Lyman, and I would agree. You know, we've seen the Titans cut a fourth-round pick at wide receiver before out of camp. That was a much different situation and a much different Titans team than this one is. I just don't really see a realistic scenario where both of the guys they just picked in the fourth round don't make the team. And Callahan, you know, talked earlier in camp about how much speed they've added at wide receiver. And we know Ridley has got speed, but obviously that's, you know, DK's calling card coming out of college football. And I don't know how often he's going to be used on offense and what that snap count and snap percentage is going to look like this year. But they've needed to get faster at wide receiver for a long time. You know, Lockett, even at his age, has still got some shiftiness there in the slot. So they've clearly made a point to get quicker, get faster at wide receiver. And I don't see them at this point making roster decisions when it comes to roster cutdown day to go against that. Like, I think somebody's really going to have to, like, if they don't have that speed and they're not one of those guys we've talked about, they're going to have to really show something in the preseason games to make this interesting, I think. Like, right now, if you ask me to predict, the six guys that we just talked about are going to be what the six guys on the wide receiver room look like at the end of camp.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to agree. I mean, at this point, I don't think my Restrepo prediction is going to age well. And obviously, I like him. He's a really good college player. Yeah, the Cam Ward thing,
yep,
maybe a little overrated, but whatever. There's still that connection. But, yeah, I think it's an uphill battle for him. Yeah, look, but the thing is, we say that, and then we're going to start these preseason games, and I promise you he'll get a lot of work and he'll probably make some plays. But so will, like, Mason Kinsey. Mason Kinsey go out there the preseason games and look like a freaking NFL starter, you know, and we just know that where he is in the pecking order. So, yeah, I think Oliver as sort of a core special teams guy, if that's what he is, and by all indications that is what he is, I think that kind of solidifies him at number six.
So I think my camp hot take heading in, Joe, was that Josh Wiley wasn't going to make the team. And again, very much limited on the information that these unofficial depth charts actually mean. But they do have Chig as the number one tight end. They've got Gunnar Helm at number two. And then it's Wiley, David Martin Robinson, Thomas Odekoya, kind of all in that mix there. So, I mean, my reasoning was, like, different style tight ends. Like, I think Wiley's going to end up being the odd man out. We'll see how many tight ends they end up keeping because that factors into it as well. But what do you make of kind of where that race stands right now? We know that Helm's going to make the team. I think we know that Chig's going to make the team. And then the race with those other three guys at tight end.
Yeah, you have a chance to be right on that, I think. You have to be careful. You know, David Martin Robinson, or DMR, was a guy who did, you know, definitely opened eyes last year in camp, and then it didn't really materialize like maybe you would have thought. So, again, the camp heroes, that's a thing every year. But, yeah, I don't think Wiley's done much to distinguish himself. I think you have to look at him as right in that mix with those guys. And if they perceive that maybe those guys are starting to pass him a little bit, I think you could be right. I mean, I still would guess that he'd end up being on the team, but it does seem like it's kind of like a two, and then there's a little bit of a gap, and then the other guys.
One texter says, interesting camp talk with the toxic positivity. Has anyone been disappointing, or is this all cupcakes and rainbows as Titans summer camp continues? I would not describe Titans training camp to this point as cupcakes and rainbows, particularly on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, yesterday we talked about how the coach was just yelling at the team coming off the field. So I don't know that I would describe Titans camp to this point as cupcakes and rainbows. Like, I'm interested to see at any point here And obviously we're going to be paying a lot of attention to the joint practices later this week. But can the offense start to catch up a little bit? That's really what I'm looking for here. But, yeah, I don't think there's been any shortage of criticism with the Titans and the way the camp has gone, particularly offensively to this point.
Yeah, I don't feel like there's – I mean, I feel like there's been a lot of negativity, actually, around Titans camp, and I think it's well-deserved.
We're talking about the offense. Apparently everybody that watches them out there thinks that there's no energy whatsoever. There's a lot of stuff going on in Titans
camp. I know,
camp.
Like what would be toxically positive so far that's been discussed?
Jeffrey Simmons?
Yeah, Jeffrey Simmons. I guess I got a little toxic saying that Jeffrey Simmons is in good shape and looks good.
But then Jeremy Fowler said
it, too. Being so toxic.
Yeah, Fowler said that, I'm not one to feed those best shape of your life storylines, but he was all over it with Jeffrey Simmons yesterday.
It is what it is. What else? You know, Dan Moore looks okay.
Yeah.
He doesn't look like a complete disaster left tackle, so that's there's something for you. Cam Ward makes some good throws.
Joey Sly's been okay so far.
True. We haven't really gotten into that too much.
What about the punter? Come on.
Well, that's a good point. I haven't heard much about Johnny Hecker.
Yeah,
is that good or bad?
I don't know. They haven't put him in danger yet. So I mean, that's already
that's
a step
in the right
forward
direction
for these guys. Yeah. Yep. So much positivity.
A lot of positivity going on out there. We're off and running today here on Robbie and Rex Road. Taking your thoughts 615-737-1025. Which Titans training camp battle fascinates you the most? As we are on the week of joint practices with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, we'll take your thoughts on all that. 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. 615-737-1025. YouTube chat flowing on the program so far. We welcome your thoughts on the YouTube feed as well. We'll have MTSU football coach Derek Mason on with us a little bit later this hour at 6:45. Chris Massaro, MTSU athletic director, will be with us at 8:30. And Juggs, we'll see today if the MTSU football social media team blurs out any quarterbacks out there too.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, maybe it'll be a trend that'll catch fire around the nation.
Sweep college football. There continues to be the pushback that whoever was blurred out at Tennessee practice was not a quarterback. So we're going to find out, I guess, at some point. Or maybe we won't.
Really?
I don't know. Yeah.
Who was saying this?
Some people from 0-3 are like, I don't think it's quarterback. It's like, all right.
Just decided to blur
it. Themselves from a trick play.
Yeah, just blurring out random people. So
okay.
Maybe that's what it was.
Okay. All right. Interesting.
I kind of hope that's the case. You're not just blowing out. That would also explain that throw a little bit if it wasn't a quarterback. So there you go.
Like Ian said, maybe Ian's right. Maybe it was a trick play, and they don't want people to know their little tricks. I mean, maybe we can get to the point where when Josh Heupel has an interview and it's like, blur out, like changes voice.
The voice disguiser.
Yeah,
it's like, I don't know who this is out there. Taking your thoughts on the Titans, 615-737-1025. Joseph says, what do you guys think about the Titans secondary as currently constructed? Well, there's a very important question involved with that. Is L'Jarius Sneed a part of it? Like, when week one rolls around, is Sneed going to be out there playing? And if he is, to what level is he going to be playing? Because if it's anything close to what he was his last year in Kansas City, then I feel pretty good about the Titans secondary, right? Like, I like Roger McCreary. I like Jarvis Brownlee and what we saw from him his rookie year. You know, Amani Hooker, I don't know that he's still the same player that he was a few years ago, but when he's healthy, still a serviceable player. And, I liked in the offseason the addition of Xavier Woods. So, on the surface, if all the starters are available, Joe, I feel okay about the Titans secondary, but until I see L'Jarius Sneed on the field with any sort of consistency, that's going to be a huge concern for me.
Yeah, but Denard Wilson definitely this weekend expressed optimism. Now, again, maybe the toxic positivity drifts into injury related. But he said he expects him to be available. He's counting on him as a starter, et cetera, to paraphrase what he said. I guess to me, this is, and I guess we'll see how it plays out. But that's an example. I wouldn't expect him to say, I'm really worried. I don't think he's going to play, whatever. But I think you're a little more non-committal.
Yeah.
If there are real concerns, So, I think that we're going to see him out there early, and then we're going to see if he can stay out there, and then we're going to see if he can play at the level he played at before. I mean, I think we're going to see that. And if somehow they can get that, you know, actually get a full or mostly full season for him, then, yeah, I think you look at that secondary, and I think that could be one of the most solid parts of the team. And there is some excitement about the rookie.
Yep.
Kevin Winston Jr., certainly. Denard Wilson said that. He said they're kind of, you know, they're kind of taking it slow. They're finding some spots for him to contribute. But, hopefully for the Titans, we're here at MTSU. I still remember Kevin Byard's rookie year. You knew right away that he was going to be good. Also, he wasn't just going to snap your fingers and be a starter, and he wasn't. It took a little bit. They kind of weaved him into some packages that season, and then eventually it was like, yeah, he's too good to keep off the field. And that's the type of thing you're hoping happens with Winston.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, the depth at corner, you know, does that get tested? How quickly into the season does it get tested? And how equipped are they to deal with it? I mean, the Snead part, the health is one thing. Let's say he's healthy. What is he, right? Like, what sort of football player is L'Jarius Sneed at this stage of his career? Who, again, is not an old guy, right? Like, what's he, 28? So it's not like – yeah, he's 28. So it's not like he's some
knees are
ancient
82,
guy.
But
how old – yeah, that's the thing. Like, he's had the knee issue that he's been dealing with. You had the quad injury last year. So let's say he is healthy and he's out there and he's able to play. Is he still the same guy? Like, is he what he was that last year in Kansas City? Or is he dropped off significantly as a player? I don't know what the answer to that is, but if he's the same guy he was in Kansas City, that obviously is a huge difference from, you know, some league average corner out there.
Right. Yeah, it's – and, again, you have a small sample size, and it wasn't anything spectacular or special last year. I don't think it was anything disastrous either.
Yep.
You know, there was he got beat notably a couple of times. I think it was the Colts game, right?
Yes.
Am I thinking of that correctly? So it wasn't. You know, they had a lot of issues. He didn't come in and magically fix everything, and I don't think he will. Even if he's in a good spot this year, but can he be? I mean, I have to think that if he's out there, he can at least be solid and solidify you at corner. You know, Brownlee's a guy who I think looks the part, should take a step in year two. Is, you know, McCreary, as we know, solid. You know, it's like you said, I mean, there's a lot to like about that if you can have that key piece available. It's still such a huge if.
Well, and, you know, the other part of that also is you can feel good about the secondary and feel like they, you know, if healthy, are in a pretty good spot. And then it comes to the front of the defense of, you know, how much pressure you put on the quarterback, right? Because if you're not able to get to the quarterback and put pressure on him with any sort of consistent basis, then how much does that weaken your secondary? And if you want to be positive about it, like if you're optimistic about your secondary, does that help your pass rush, right? Like, are you able to cover longer and give your guys more opportunity to get home? If given the choice, Joe, I would rather have the pass rush getting after the quarterback and helping out the secondary. That's not the way the Titans, I think, are going to have to operate this year unless somebody just steps up and is unexpectedly great rushing the passer in addition to Jeffrey Simmons. So I'm interested to see how that part of the defense shakes out. But, you know, we heard from some people yesterday. You know, the offense is struggling a lot. How much of that is the offense just being bad, and how much of that is maybe the defense is better than maybe we think it is on paper heading in this year? I don't know what the answer to that is.
Yeah, I don't either. I mean, at this point, anything that, you know, one side beats the other side, I'm going to just default to, okay, so the side that get beat is really stinking it up right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not gonna give too much benefit of the doubt to the other side. The defense, you know, there are some beyond the secondary, you know, there are some things that could be good. Obviously, Simmons and Sweat inside. The linebackers, I mean, you know, it's good to see, like, James Williams rise up and sort of, you know, really, I think, solidify himself right now as a starter. With Cody Barton, seems to be, like, a good pickup. So there's some things to like. But, yeah, that the pass rush group, I'm a huge believer in – you give me a great pass rush and average or sub-average secondary, I'm going to be better off than no pass rush and a great secondary. I mean, I just don't think this secondary is going to make up for no pass rush. And so can they have pass rush? I don't know.
One Texas says, curious on your thoughts on Colts camp. You're seeing Anthony Richardson out there throwing some dimes. Let's go.
Oh.
Show me Anthony Richardson throwing some dimes in the game, and then I'll get scared.
Yeah, I mean, clearly he's – I think he's responded. I think that's fair to say. Also, I think that Daniel Jones has sort of – has not responded, has not played well.
He's played like Daniel Jones.
Yeah, right. So, but still, play like Daniel Jones compared to what Richardson has been, he's starting for me, right?
I would agree.
So it sounds like Richardson is improving. But, yeah, like you still have to see it in real games. And I mean, those numbers have to improve dramatically. And, like, the biggest question with him is his health. Just like a lot of people. Just like luxurious need, just like so many people in this league. But, I mean, he hasn't been able to stay healthy. The way they want to use him puts him in harm's way. And I would want to do that too. But, you know, it's just I have serious doubts still. I would much rather watch, if I'm a Colts fan or really just an NFL fan in general, I would much rather see him get snaps and see if he can get better than see any more Daniel Jones, because I just don't think – I think he is what he is at this point, and Richardson may still be something different. But, yeah, don't get too excited. Don't get too excited about camp, please.
615-737-1025, our phone number. The coaches poll is out in college football. What are some of our main takeaways? What do we think it means heading into the season? We will get into that coming up next. Later today on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, the Sounds taking on Jacksonville at First Horizon Park with first pitch at 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app. And at thegamenashville.com, Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. We'll have Derek Mason, MTSU football coach, with us coming up at 6:45 here on the program. Joe, speaking of college football coaches, the coaches poll is out in college football heading into the year. We got Texas at number one, Ohio State at number two. So those two will meet each other to begin the season in what is going to be one of the most highly anticipated season openers in regular season college football history. So looking forward to that one coming up to begin the season on August the 30th. But kind of just scrolling through the coaches poll here, Tennessee coming in at number 18 in the coaches poll, one spot behind Florida at 17, one spot in front of Indiana at number 19. So, Joe, as you saw the coaches poll come out yesterday, and we'll see what the AP poll eventually looks like, but what did you make of Tennessee's spot in it, and what else stood out to you about the coaches poll?
Well, the biggest thing that stands out to me is I understand Ohio State is Ohio State, okay? But, like, I look at this poll, and it's like, are we just doing this so we can get one versus two? Ohio State shouldn't be number two. Ohio State should not be the top-ranked Big Ten team at all. Like, I understand that they always beat Penn State and all that stuff, but, like, look at the teams this year, what Penn State brings back, which is an absurd haul coming back, including a guy who could be a first-round quarterback. Ohio State has Julian Sand. We'll see if he's good. I mean, they got maybe the best player in Jeremiah Smith.
Yep.
They lost a ton, and I understand it, so you just assume with Ohio State, but that doesn't always happen. Bama isn't always at the top level. Georgia isn't always at the top level. We've seen that in recent years. I don't understand how voters don't see a fall off in Ohio State. So that's the biggest thing that, I mean, to me, Ohio State should be about 8 or 9. But hey, man, we get number one versus number two. Yep. Get rid of the preseason polls. No, don't get rid of the preseason polls. That's absolutely stupid. I think Tennessee got a lot of respect at 18. Losing Nico, I think that's a respect ranking for the program. In my opinion, maybe some Vols fans aren't happy with that, and you're like, you know, we should be in the top 10 every year. I don't care. But I think that's a pretty good show of respect from the voters.
Well, I think you got to keep in mind, Tennessee was number 15 in the poll last year heading into the season, and that was the AP poll. So when the season opened last year, they were number 15, and then they kind of worked their way up from there. But, you know, we'll see what the AP poll says. My guess is Tennessee's going to be lower in the AP poll than they were in the coaches poll. We'll see what happens on that front.
But it kind of goes – just love Heupel?
Well, I think it goes to – first off, we've talked about this before. how much time do coaches actually spend kind of working on all this, or how much are they just ready to get it over with and get the poll done? So there's that part of it too.
Yes.
But I do think that, you know, as we talked about a few weeks ago, you know, if you look at Tennessee's roster, the talent is continuing to build, right? Like we talked about that blue chip ratio where you've got to be over a certain number of four and five-star guys to win a national championship. That's what the math shows you over the last 25 years. And for the first time in a long time, they're above that number. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to go win a national championship this year, but it's a talented roster. It's just a very young roster. So what is that going to end up meaning at the end of it? I don't know, but I'm with you. Like, to me, that I expected them to be maybe in the low 20s, maybe, and then kind of right on that fringe, that edge there of being in the top 25. So we'll see what the AP poll looks like and what that all means. And at the end of the day, as we talked about before, you know, being ranked in the preseason poll is nice, but we react to information, especially early in a college football season, pretty quickly when you start to play the game. So we'll see what that looks like. But I still look at Tennessee, and I think they've got a chance, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, if healthy, to be pretty stout on that side of the ball. And then offense is just a total crapshoot. Have no idea what that's going to look like.
Yeah. I think you can count on them being good to very good on defense, and that's a great thing to have. I mean, I think they are kind of upset proof, but I actually kind of think this offense is anyway. Even, you know, even in the state it's been the last couple of years where they just haven't had the explosive plays, they have not had the passing efficiency, it's still what they do offensively is still, you know, because the way they can run the ball out of that, I think it's really hard for a team with less talent to beat Tennessee, and that's a great that's a great thing to have. But yeah, certainly this could be a team that ends up out of the top 25 because of the offense. If things don't come together, at least there are possible answers at quarterback. There's multiple possible answers at quarterback. The receiver thing is probably as concerning as, but the offensive line, I mean, that's still such a huge question for me. And I feel like if that gets worked out, and if their optimism you're hearing right now actually plays out, this is the time for toxic positivity.
Yep.
Then, you know, you can see how it could all shake out. I think Ole Miss, you could make a case that Ole Miss is a little bit overrated at 15. Even Florida at 17. You know, just, I mean, right now, just some of the questions about DJ Lagway. And,
yep,
man, I mean, it's pretty amazing to think about Florida at 17. I know they ended the season on a run last year, but how rough things were looking for that team, you know, for a lot of last year.
Well, and, you know, Tennessee, that's why I'm interested to see what the AP poll looks like, because Tennessee has got, I think they're picked to finish ninth in the SEC at SEC Media Days, right? So now, if you start going through the list, ninth in the SEC, not really as bad as it sounds because there are a lot of really good teams in front. But, like, if you're ninth in the SEC, you're probably a borderline top 25 team at that point, right? I mean, just depending on how the season shakes out. So I'm interested to see what that part of it looks like. I'm with you, though. Like, you know, there are a lot of teams on, like, what is Alabama going to be this year? They got a lot of talent,
no idea.
What kind of quarterback player are they going to get? LSU, like, this feels like a year where Brian Kelly at LSU really needs to break through and figure it out. Is he going to? I don't know. They're number nine in the coaches poll. You know, South Carolina, I think, as much as I don't like their Gruber head coach, has a chance to be pretty good this year, particularly with their quarterback and Lenore Sellers and what he brings to the table.
I'm surprised they're not in the top 10.
Yeah,
honestly.
I am too. Yeah.
They're 13. Like, I would rank them ahead of – well, you know, South Carolina, LSU, I think they're both, to me, like right around that fringe of the top 10.
Yeah. One texter says, isn't Texas the same position as Ohio State? They lost a lot on both sides of the ball and also have an unproven quarterback.
Yes, but he's still but I still feel better. And I'm you know, I'm the biggest brake pumper around when it comes to Arch Manning, where it's like, oh, he's going to be the number one pick. He's a Heisman, blah, blah, blah. But – like, he's still been on the field doing some stuff. He seems to be rounding into, like, okay, he's ready. Like, this is the year. It's been a longer wait than you might have expected. I feel pretty good. I think he's going to be good. Julian Sand is talented. No clue. I mean, there is a difference there. You know, Julian Sand, big recruit, no clue. And Ohio State, I mean, like, we see it all over the place. You were talking about quarterbacks yesterday and the transferring. Like, just the recruiting profile of the quarterback how many times do we see it? And then they get on the field and it's like, this is not it.
Yeah.
You just don't know until you get out there. So, look, I'm excited about that game. I could make the case for – I think Penn State, I'm sitting there, like, complaining that they're underrated at 3. But, like, I could make the case for them to be 1. The problem is people are going to – it's like James Franklin doesn't win the big games.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't win enough of them, but, he's got a loaded team. So, yeah, you could make the case that both of those top two are overrated. I just think Ohio State, to me, is really – like, they really lost. Texas has more back that's proven – on both sides of the ball than Ohio State does.
I would agree. I mean, the interesting one to me on this list, I think they're going to be the runaway favorite in the ACC. But, like, there are people that believe that Dabo's got a team this year down there in Clemson that is back and is a legitimate national title threat. We'll see. You know, I've talked about this before with Cade Klubnik. I need to see Cade Klubnik play well in some of these bigger games before I'm a big-time believer in him. But, like, the ACC, it kind of feels like it's them or it's Miami with Carson Beck, and we'll see what that looks like there. I mean, I know Notre Dame is its own thing and plays, they're independent, but they play a lot of ACC teams as well, so we'll see what that all looks like. But the Clemson part of this and what exactly they're going to be this year, there are a lot of people that think that this is a year where – Dabo could be a sneaky national title contender out there in Clemson.
Yeah, I could make the case for them to be underrated at 6. I hear you on Klubnik. We do get – not only do we get Texas Ohio State, we get that Clemson LSU game. So
yep.
We get Klubnik and Nussmeier. And
that's a big one.
That's a two really – I mean, to have both of those in week one is pretty fantastic. But, they're loaded on D. It still doesn't feel like, obviously a few years ago, Clemson, you just knew it was like Clemson and Alabama were going to be the top two most talented teams in college football. That's how it felt. It doesn't feel like that anymore. But it's a pretty good kind of comeback here for Dabo. And it is all about Klubnik. There's people who think he's a number one pick. I'm still hesitant on that. But you can't deny, like, after the Georgia game last year, I hit the numbers and the production and the they were ridiculous. So, I still have in my head like that Orange Bowl where I was like, oh my gosh, you can't complete a forward pass.
Right.
But that's
a long time ago.
That's why you work and develop. So, I'm very interested to see if he is that guy. If he's a first round quarterback, then yeah, you have to consider them a national championship favorite. And I don't know. I get Miami; they got talent and Beck. It's going to be interesting, but I have my doubts.
615-737-1025 is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Coming up next, we'll be joined by MTSU head football coach Derek Mason in year two of building this program here at Middle Tennessee State University. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you, and we are happy to welcome in our guy, Derek Mason, MTSU head football coach, to the program. Derek, what's going on, brother? How we doing?
Man, good to see you fellas, man. We back in the game, man.
Let's go.
It's good to see you guys. It's been a minute. College football is here, so what we're trying to do is get better with these practices so we can transfer some of that practice to the game.
Well, how are you feeling about your group? I remember, we were at this event last year, and you were talking about, being in transition and stepping into this job and kind of the challenges that went with that, and here we are in year two. How are you feeling about your squad heading into this year?
I feel good about this squad. You don't know what you have until you play games, right? But, the retention of 49 players, to me, really cemented how we wanted to start the offseason. We lost a couple of guys to the portal, man, who – played extremely well, and then we put a lot of guys in the portal. And that 49, because people talk about 62 new players, but what people don't realize, every year you're recruiting a batch of around 25 to 30 freshmen. So that class you take out of there, it's really the acquisition guys, the free agency, part of it, man, that really changed this team in my mind. Because we had young guys get older, we had some older guys stay, and then we went out and tried to really start the reclamation process with the offensive line, right, and what was needed. And then from there, we took key pieces, okay, Alex Mitchell at backer, just to, you know, like name one or two guys, Amarion Walker, Najee Cox, you know, two receivers that I think are going to be dynamic for what we do. We just added some key pieces, like, to the puzzle, and now I think we've got a well-balanced team, a mature team led by Nick Vadiato and Parker Hughes, that's ready to go hunt. People have said some things, caught our attention. We kept some receipts, and now it's time to go.
Absolutely.
So, and that's the thing. You have that continuity at quarterback.
Right.
What's the next step for Nick at quarterback?
Well, it's really about the offensive line, okay? Your offensive line sort of paves the way. Football's a line scrimmage game. But what happens is what you do on your offensive line not only, you know, allows you to sort of dictate terms of pace of play and how you want to play, but it also helps create, if they're physical enough, it helps create a great defensive line because that's what you go against every day,
yep.
Right? So I think as our defensive line's gotten, like, older and more mature and this offensive line is more athletic, the battles that we see in the trenches have been dramatically different, okay? It's been some straight-up fist fighting, like, going on, and in a good way. You know, iron sharpening iron, so I feel like the edges are getting sharp.
Well, back on Vadiato, so you know in today's college football,
yeah,
like, finding a quarterback that's got that much experience,
right,
that has played that much football is becoming harder and harder to do, right? So
yeah,
how much of an advantage is that for you guys to have that guy and that a guy that has played
a lot,
that much football?
Yeah, you know, really, really, if we wanted to, we can let, you know, now that he's in the second year of the system, he can call it.
Yeah.
He doesn't need the head coach, okay, or the offensive coordinator really giving him the situations. He's been in every situation you can be in, right, from the two-minute drill to you know, like situational ball, two-point plays. He's been in every situation that you can be in. And I think to have that type of command, okay, of not only offense but like trust, okay, like in the coaching staff, that permeates down to the players. They know that this dude can go play. And he had a chance to go other places and decided to stay here.
Yeah.
He's a Blue Raider, right? And I think that gives them uber confidence. They're ultra confident, man, because he plays with ultra confidence. And I can't give him enough credit, you know, like for what he's done, but he's a humble dude. The dude comes to work every day. And you know what? He talks as much trash, you know, like going back at the defense. Right now, we're in a good space, man, because I didn't see any of that a year ago. And I think it was because everybody was learning everybody.
Yeah.
You know, like there were so many, you know, like new pieces and new systems that it really didn't allow guys to come out of their shell and show who they are. But Nick's an alpha. So anytime you have an alpha male, okay, around guys, you know, the strength of the wolf is the pack. The strength of the pack is the wolf. And, you know, like, he's one and the same when I look at, you know, he's the wolf, but he's also the pack. So I appreciate that.
Derek, you mentioned those battles up front. I feel like you got some of your most talented players maybe on the edge on,
yeah,
that defense. How much is that – how much of those guys come along and how much is that going to be a game changer if you can get after the quarterback, get the quarterback to the ground more this year?
We went and got some pass rushes, right? And it's the name of the game. But here's what I told some of our guys, because I thought some of those guys burned slick. You know, look, you can't just want a pass rush. You physically got to dominate first or second down to earn the right to rush the passer. Then you get off the field, right? And I think we got bigger and longer on the edges, okay, created a little more length for physicality, okay, at the point of attack so we can set edges. Now, you know, when you're looking at, like, Buckner, and you're looking at, you know, I mean, Reggie and some of these other dudes, Matthias coming off the edge. I mean, we are long. I mean, we're I look at Buck's the smallest at 6'2.5". The rest of those guys start to go 6'3", 6'4", 6'6", 6'5". That changes the game. Squeezing throwing lanes. Hands up, ball hand the quarterback. We just look different. And the pass rush challenges in one-on-ones have been that much more dynamic. I think because of Jacob Ott at tackle, you know, Habanowski at tackle, two portal guys that I think add length, a lot of play ability and experience, iron is sharpening iron. That's what I'm talking about. The edges, the pass rush edges are better, but the tackles are better. And I think both of those two are going to help lead the way for where we want to go, especially in critical situations. Because you know, like I know, You got to be able to throw the ball on third and 10, okay, and get first downs.
Yep.
But that comes from protection. But you also got to get off the field on third and 10 with pass rushers. And so, like, those two key, like, positions, you know, tackles and defensive ends, they got to lead the way for us.
So we were talking with you before you came on just about the facilities around here. And
right.
We've talked about the new student athlete center. The field looks awesome. We were talking about that to begin the show and the new yeah. turf and everything on there. What do you make of what's been done to this point and mm-hmm. what's continuing to happen around here?
It's just alignment, right? Mm-hmm. You talk about, you know, like what's been secured and what's happening. This project is done. You know, state funds, a lot of money is getting ready to go into the Murphy Center and additional upgrades around this corner here, this athletic corner over here. It's going to be something to behold. You got a hotel going across the way here shortly. There's just so many things happening here. I think the university is coming into its prime. We're opening a new engineering building, you know, here in a couple of days. This place is growing as fast as Tennessee is, right? When you talk about the mid-state area, there's just a lot of movement, a lot of things happening. Our traction, this traction is truly about, you know, alignment from the president to the athletic director to the board of trustees in making Middle Tennessee a player in the grand scheme of things. Okay, this is football country. Okay, like it really is. And I think the movement, this idea that man, we want to contend, you know, for conference titles, it takes investment. And there's no better investment than being able to look at the Jumbotron behind us, the football field, and the facility that sit behind you gentlemen.
I'm seeing Kevin Byard's name walking in.
Yep, the straight.
It looks weight room looks amazing.
KB, yeah. The mission, bro. Yeah.
So that's because obviously, I mean, you're comparing yourself to your conference peers. So
yeah.
Facilities is a big part, but obviously, so is investment in players yeah. and the portal and stuff. How do you feel like you guys are set up to compete and comparing yourself to the other teams in your league in
you
that
know
way?
What? I think we're right with. You know, like the top two or three teams in our conference in terms of what that looked like. Obviously, Coach Kelly, you know, been taking over for Rich Rod. You know, they've pushed some things a little bit. Man, you got some new players coming into the conference with, you know, you look at Delaware. Delaware's always had some history, right?
Yep.
You know, in terms of resourcing. But, you know, Liberty, you know, that's the one everybody got to catch, right? That's the one everybody's going after. But here's the thing. I don't think you worry about money to money. I think you worry about, okay, what's the investment? What are you looking for? And how do you build out who you are? You know, this thing, like Liberty's going to get theirs differently than we get ours. We need our community. It looks different, right? I mean, we are Middle Tennessee, right? I mean, from Shelbyville to North Nashville, this thing's going to look different. And we're going blue collar with it. We're going business to business. We're going household to household. I mean, you have like 1 in 6 homes between Shelbyville and North Nashville has an MTSU grad. Come on now. Yeah. That's 250,000 alumni just in the corridor. We don't have to, you know, go do what everybody else is doing. But we've also gotten smart with corporate partners. Okay, and that's where I've seen the growth. That's where I've seen Dr. McPhee and Chris really get into this thing. We're coming back with concert series. The Murphy Center was once one of the best concert venues, okay, in Tennessee, and now that's going to come back. So the revenue generation has put us in a position where now we can compete in the NIL space. So it's been a blue-collar effort. There's been the corporate sponsorship, and that's been – sort of like this resurgence and understanding that, you know, it's Blue United. We got to get everybody on the same page.
Derek, last thing for you because we know you got to practice the route too here. Just when you took this job last year, you talked mm-hmm. about, you know, your path to get here and all those things. What did you learn last year about this job and what mm-hmm. it's going to take to be successful and kind of your vision moving forward here?
You know what? You got to cultivate, you know, the land. You know, you got to plant some seeds. You got to watch the seeds grow, man. You got to take care of it, and you have to ruthlessly protect your culture. You got to build one first, but then you got to protect it. And I think having a space is finally giving our guys a home. You know, when you're talking about building culture, you know, we were somewhat nomadic, having to go here, there, just trying to figure it out. And now what I see is with this football team, there's a brotherhood. So there's a difference between being a teammate and a brotherhood. Right? A teammate just wears a jersey. A brotherhood, man, everybody protects the culture. And now That's the second phase of this, okay? But it's a brotherhood, and now what we got to do is go, you know, divest that a little bit, man. We got to let it show every day. We got to win days, stack those days, and let those days become what they may in terms of the winning process.
Well, Derek, we're excited to watch it. We appreciate y'all having us out here today. Excited to watch practice today, too, and thanks for being with us, man. We'll talk to you soon.
Let's go Blue.
Absolutely. Derek Mason, thanks, our guest here on Robbie and Rex Roll. We'll react to what Derek Mason had to say coming up next. Take your thoughts at 615-737-1025, our phone number. More coming up next on Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.